my name is Dave Hanrady, and there will be no encore. Welcome to episode 69 of the No Encore Music Podcast. We're back in the house. I'm with my two best friends in the whole wide world. Hi.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, man.
Happy birth yesterday.
Thanks, man. Yay. Falling myself.
Jesus, yeah. I was lame as well.
It went well.
I think he's trying to cheer himself up because the strange LED light contraption he has in front of him is not illuminating the V.
In my name.
It's just Dave.
The fact that you have your name in front of you illuminated as we do this is kind of freaking me out.
I'm a narcissist. What can
I say?
Yeah, I don't know. It was a good birthday. If you recall.
We all became men of a different vintage in recent times.
It was a workmanlike birthday. Could do more. It
strong
was like six. 6 out of 10. Yeah. No, I'd say 7.5 out of 10. Oh, maybe even an 8.
Jesus.
Didn't have everything, but it had a lot of things. And this time last year, if you recall, we did like an hour and 49 minute podcast on my birthday, which
what
was
one was that?
Wildly
what did
he chaos. We brought Vinny.
Oh, that was great. Yeah.
Vinny Casey and Sarah Hedeman were here that day.
That was good
and
fun.
And that's when I got that picture of George Harrison that haunts us to this day.
Oh my god, it's still here
of the studio.
Has that been there the whole time? Just staring at
me. It's really unnerving.
It really is. It looks like
especially
he's about to go fishing.
Well, the main problem is that he looks so much like Noel Edmonds.
Oh no, we have to turn around now. I can't.
It's really, really freaking me out. Yeah, I don't like it at all.
All right.
Anyway, we all went to a gig.
We did. I went to a gig, which is probably the biggest news. No?
You're back in it, though.
I'm back in it. Pixies at Trinity.
Yeah.
It was really good. I enjoyed it.
It was very good. Yeah, I'd heard that they'd gone a bit like Bob Dylan guessed the song sort of shit.
Really? That bad?
I mean, that's what I'd heard.
Yeah, I'd heard they just don't give a shit anymore. Yeah.
But it seemed like they did.
Yeah.
They seemed really good to
within
me.
Reason. I mean, I thought it was great, but it was incredibly businesslike. It was like song,
banter with the
high Dublin, song, big finish, take a bow.
Yeah, but at the same time...
But what a set list!
If Frank Black was kind of like, hey, what up, Dublin? Last time I was in town, he'd be like, what the fuck is going on?
Exactly. I didn't expect anything other than what we got, but it was a great set. They opened up with Gouge Away. That's a hell of a way to start a set.
It's a great song.
They closed with Winter Long, which I don't think they play that often, but that was great, with Pazl and Chanton kind of taking the vocals. I feel kind of sorry for Paz because she's really good, but she's not Kim Deal, and therefore that will always be held against her.
And
didn't
also
stop
it's
you continually taking photos of her, did it?
Hang
Dave?
On a minute now.
What?
I took
what?
Photos of the band.
Hold on, mate. What? I wasn't Mitch's at this point.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I've heard that about Dave. He leans right.
I don't know what you mean.
Is it a bit worrying that all these like Gen X bands are like kind of just replacing their female bassists with other female bassists? I know they have to. They're like, there's female vocals in the song, so that's kind of one reason. But it's a bit like we get someone a bit close to Kim Deal. I don't know. It strikes me as weird.
I mean, it is a reasonable question. Yeah,
yeah,
I mean,
take.
I did think.
Yes, hot take for Patrick.
I did kind of wonder that myself when it was first announced. I was like, have they explicitly gone for it? But I mean, you know, like she had the resume and shit, like so.
Yeah, she was.
You looked at the resume.
She was in A Perfect Circle and Zwan.
Zwan.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. I knew. I recognized her from some sort of mid 2000s music video. I couldn't place it, and yeah, it's Honesty by Zwan.
I was clearing out all my old Q magazines during the week, and there was an article like about Zwan, and they're going to be the next big thing, and blah blah. I was just like, oh god,
there's still time.
Are you still cleaning your house?
Very
just
much
as
so.
A brief aside.
The amount, I'll show you the pictures. The amount of music magazines is insane.
I believe this for sure.
It's crazy. Stuff going back.
But
to
it was a great set. Like Tame, Dead, all the usuals.
They didn't play
my
two favorites.
They didn't.
No.
Which were
they never do River Euphrates and Levitate Me.
Okay.
Upset.
I thought it was good.
It was really good.
Yeah, no,
I mean, it was interesting because like this is part of MCD's summer series, which is now concluded, and you know you're kind of like, what's it going to be like? Will it be like, how will the sound be? Yeah. I thought the sound was pretty good.
I mean, like, look,
venue was decent.
Yeah, let's be fair. I mean, like, you know, MCD have a track record where you would be very surprised if they started suddenly ruining.
Marry
shit.
Them, why don't you?
Well, no, to be fair, in terms of stuff like sound, I mean, you wouldn't expect them to be turning up with something.
They're
like
very much in the business of sound, I find.
Really? But it was a good size, I thought.
Yeah, it worked perfectly well, yeah.
Yeah.
And I would go to a gig there again.
And really nice to be able to fucking like just get off the bus and walk into a gig.
Could have been improved if the pav was open, you could just get cans out of it. But apart from that, all good, yeah.
Leo Varadkar was there having a good time.
Was he?
Yes, he was. Got his photograph taken with Frank Black. And Fan Club opened proceedings. They supported. We'll be talking with them later in the show because despite what I said on the last episode, we're going to review their album.
We are indeed.
Yay. But first, before we get to the news, well, I guess this is kind of newsy. Bit of a kerfuffle.
It's a snafu.
Bit of a ramshackle situation in Evening Herald Terrors.
Yeah.
Cullum, what happened?
So they they printed a story about Lukaku signing for United, Romelu Lukaku moving from Everton, and illustrated it with a picture of Stormzy.
It was really bad. Stormzy seemed quite upset as well on Twitter. Like, I don't really get the joke.
But institutional racism.
Yeah, I mean,
just
like
a terrible, terrible mistake.
Yeah,
and it's just because he was in a United shirt once. It wasn't even a home kit. Like, you think they would have thought,
it's
no,
a blue training top or something. Yeah.
Also, they look different because they're different people.
That being the main problem here, like, you know, the fact he's in a training top and they're different people.
Yep. Can you imagine being that editor?
Oh, I mean,
Maybe the Even Hair will do a thing like they do in football, where like refs get demoted to like to League Two for the weekend or something. So maybe he'll have to go and work for Alive or something. You know, that Catholic newspaper free sheet.
I don't really, to be honest.
Well, I'm not saying I'm a fan, or like
an avid reader.
yeah, avid fan of Alive magazine.
But at the same time, talking about, there's like loads of people on Twitter being like, "Oh, someone's getting sacked." I mean, it's not really. It's just the worst mistake ever. I mean, I'm sure they feel just dreadful enough without having to lose their job.
If ever there was time for people to stand outside a newspaper's office and shout "sacked" in the morning, this was it. That would have been fairly kind of on point. But yeah, horrible. And thankfully, you know, we've never done it like that in our hot press days.
No,
as in, like, you know, we've never had a gaffe of that nature. Like, I mean, because that kind of shit, like, I mean, like, you know, it's you're it's print. You're fucked.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, it's true.
You're gone.
Like, I can imagine the photo editor running from shop to shop trying to buy up the supplies. Like.
Probably their biggest selling fucking issue.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Oh, yeah, one for the grandkids, isn't
Collector's edition.
Well, in the news this week, we've talked about Fyre Festival before.
Oh, yeah.
A quick catch-up on that one. It was a disaster kind of put together by a bunch of influencers to lure rich kids.
From the minute one of the marketing guys heard that it shouldn't happen and said, let's do it anyway and be legends, it's been like an unmitigated disaster.
So the organiser of this is currently being investigated by the FBI for fraud, may be facing jail time.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of rich kids were stranded on an island, not promised the bougie experience that they're teased with by the Instagram crowd. The latest in this is Blink-182 were supposed to be one of the headliners, but they pulled out, I guess, knowing what was going to happen. Matt Skiba of Alkaline Trio fame, who has replaced Tom DeLonge in the band, has given an interview to the NME that has since been pulled, which should tell you something, in which he basically says that Fyre Festival, he used witchcraft and all of his pagan beliefs to wish that this festival wouldn't happen. And then it didn't happen, so he's taking the blame through some hoodoo.
Yeah, I think it's like the standalone sentence of "I consider myself a pagan and a witch" is just yes, thank you. and he said, "With every inch of my energy, I wanted Fyre not to happen. I put all the electricity and energy in my body
against the fucking rock,
that thing happening." No idea, to be perfectly honest.
Is this the thing? Like, once you're in Blink 182, you're going to go a bit like
loopy.
Yeah, loopy is the word. Although he then went on to kind of make quite a nice point, like a righteous point, about how he didn't kind of like basically the festival was kind of classist, and he didn't like the fact that all these rich kids were hanging out with, you know, much poorer people in the Bahamas, and that was kind of the reason for them pulling out. But yeah, I'll take responsibility and everyone can blame me, he says.
Shazam.
I was on my couch being somewhat guilty, but very relieved that I wasn't there with people stealing from each other.
I mean, do you imagine that, like, Travis Barker and Mark Hoppus?
There
I'm
you
just
go.
Going up the top of my head there.
Yeah, you got it. Well,
yeah,
then,
thank you.
Congratulations.
But do you think they're just sitting there going, what are the fucking odds? Like, we finally managed to lose the mental from the band and we've hired this guy.
Well, you know, he had to contribute somehow, seeing as most of his vocals were turned down in the mix on that record that they put out, so he's managed to stake his claim. More on Fyre Festival as it continues to burn. In other news, we talk about Dave Grohl being the nicest man in rock.
Nicest man in rock.
He's the nicest man in rock. And
do you know that, Craig?
I've heard he's the nicest man in rock.
Some people have said that he's the nicest man in rock. Well, one person who said that he isn't is their ex-drummer, Foo Fighters' ex-drummer William Goldsmith, who's lashed out at Grohl, calling him a school bully, and said that he was left, quote, creatively raped, which is a hell of a term.
It's quite a term,
It doesn't sit well. Yeah, he played for the band as the drummer between 95 and 97, contributing to their second album, The Colour and the Shape, and then discovered, I guess when the album itself went to print, that Dave Grohl had gone and re-recorded all of his parts.
Yeah.
Yeah, he says...
Doesn't sound very nice to me.
No, he says, you know, it would have been nice if I had been informed about this.
Here's
I mean,
that word again.
Dave, as a drummer,
hi.
If your parts were re-recorded, would you feel creatively raped?
I'm not going to use that term.
Yeah.
That term is fucking, like, problematic. Yeah, I'd feel bad.
You would feel bad. Yeah. I feel like this probably goes on a lot where you know you're a hired hand if you're, you know.
Well, he says he felt more like a full-time band member than a session musician.
Yeah.
Because they asked him to stay on. They wanted him to go on that tour and still be in the band. But he said that he couldn't do it because he felt that it wouldn't be his parts. I mean, yeah, I mean, like, you got to, like, in any kind of creative process, if someone came along and was like, I'm rewriting this or I'm redoing your drums and never saying it to you beforehand, like that to me is, that's very bad behavior, yeah.
Yeah, although at the same time, I mean, like, it is Dave Grohl. And this is at the very start of Foo Fighters. So basically, at this stage, Dave Grohl is not superstar frontman. Dave Grohl is Nirvana drummer Dave Grohl still. Yeah. So you surely can't be that surprised if he decides he wants to drum instead.
Goldsmith says himself he thinks management wanted Dave Grohl on drums, which, of course, you know, would probably, you know, bolster the album sales. And I'm sure it did. You can kind of understand why Dave Grohl might have re-recorded stuff, but maybe should have told him. But then your man goes on to say that, remember once Dave said in an interview that touring with me was like touring with a punching bag. That's not very nice.
This reminds me, there's a great book on Pearl Jam. It's called Five Against One. It's written by a Rolling Stone writer. It only covers them up until, I think, the end of the 90s or something, because it was written a while ago. But their second drummer was a guy called Dave Abruzzese, and he was on Versus, that album, and he might have been on Vitalogy as well. But by all accounts, he comes across like an absolute sweetheart, this lovely guy. But the band never really accepted him. And he got like their logo tattooed at one point, and the guitarist was like, you know that's for life, don't you? But like Vedder was routinely horrible to him.
It's like the Metallica thing, yeah.
And it was like a thing where apparently, like, you know, your man Dave Abruzzese passed out on stage one night because he was sick. And he told the band in the dressing room afterwards what he was going through and how stressed he was and how upset he was. And he put his head in his hands at one point, and when he looked up, they were all gone. So like, this shit goes on. And what I will say is, it's always the fucking drummer, guys, who gets, like, picked on and pushed around. But I tell you,
I'm pretty sure Mucha got bullied in the Sugar Babes as well, though, so that's something.
Could she play drums?
Maybe.
Possibly, yeah.
I thought she was
she doing the bullying.
No, I might be wrong. Sorry, Mucha, but...
Well, look, listen. I mean, this Goldsmith character isn't going to be pushed around any longer. Because he stepped up and cut a weird wrestling promo at the end of this when he said, at the same time at that point in my life, my ability to set boundaries and my own self-confidence was lacking, and I made it that much easier for him. As time has gone on, I've gone through some experiences which have turned me into a man. People aren't allowed to pull bullshit with me anymore. I'm as much at fault for allowing myself to get treated like crap. The way I look at it now is, if I hadn't have happened... The records, I'm running out of the sentence because it's really long and boring. But basically,
it ends somehow with, and I wouldn't have the children I have.
Which is
and
a
you're
weird
like,
thing to say. I mean, and again, shades of Carlos Tevez when he was playing for Manchester United, like saying, Mr. Ferguson made me so mad today, I went home and took it out on my wife and kids. And I'm like, I don't think Mr. Ferguson is the problem there, mate.
But in fairness, that's not what your man's saying. Your man's saying, like, he's trying
to... I'm not alleging that he, like...
No! What he's saying is that if, like, these awful things hadn't happened to me, maybe my life would be worse off.
Yeah, which is,
you know, but we all rationalise in that weird way sometimes, don't we, when something awful's happened to us?
Do we?
End up on a podcast.
Butterfly effect, etc.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, well, look.
I once tried to explain the butterfly effect to someone, and they answered with, I like butterflies.
Was it Ashton Kutcher?
No.
That's a bad movie. Yeah, that's in my top 10 worst films. Which we're not doing this week, but we are doing your top 10 songs.
Yeah,
we are.
I tasked you with this last week.
I feel sick. This was really, really hard.
Okay.
I had other, like, real life decisions to make this week, but
like what they, haven't,
been, they haven't been made. It's just like, this has been so painful. This is really, really hard. Well, I just
know it is. I told you it was. Yeah. And you were like, oh, fuck off, Dave. Give
That's
it a
exactly how I talk. Fuck off, Dave. All right, well, I just do it.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, so I'll count down, will I? Now, I've actually put them in order, as opposed to just doing a weird half-arsed, like, alphabetical thing like you did last week.
Why don't you get the fuck out of the studio, yeah? It's still technically my birthday.
All right, I will say there's a Jay-Z and Kanye song that should be in this.
Oh, listen to all this build-up and this, like, this
which I'll call Ninjas in Paris so I can, like, remain everyone's unproblematic fave. But it'll only be reinstated once they, you know, sort out their feud. So that's my political message.
Well, let's have that as our underscore music here, shall we?
That'll work well. Yeah,
okay, all right. Get going.
On list. All right. At number 10, The Replacements, Alex Chilton, the greatest rock song of all time. At number 9, a song from last year, Frank Ocean, Ivy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm putting too much into this, aren't I? Number 8, Burt Bacharach, This Guy's in Love with You.
Solid choice.
Amazing. Yeah. Number 7, Wild Beasts, Reach a Bit Further. Amazing song. Number 6, Talib Kweli, Get By.
Yeah.
Bit of Kanye Shoot. Production. He's in there. Number five. All right, this is the top five. This actually, the top five is like set.
Right.
So I've decided this is definitely the top five, all right? Unlike, say, Dave.
Unlike the previous five, they're not definitely
they're,
the top
they're like, other stuff might come in there and blah, blah, blah. That was really hard. Yeah, top five. Okay. All right. Number five, Broken Social Scene, Shampoo Suicide.
Okay.
Number four, The Go-Betweens, Bachelor Kisses.
Okay.
Number three, The Strokes, Last Night.
Okay.
Hard to explain, mate.
No, Last Night.
Jesus.
This is favourites now. This isn't the greatest songs ever, okay. right? So this is like sentimental stuff is coming into this, right? Number two, Vashti Bunyan, Train Song.
Okay.
Right.
You know that? Yeah. Number one, Can Dave Guess?
Is it Ninjas in Paris?
No, I said it's not on the list. That was the whole point. Yeah.
Sorry, I wasn't paying attention. There's a fly in the studio.
I know,
I'm
come on.
To get rid of. Can I guess your number one?
Yeah, come on.
Yeah, it's 6 a.m. Jolinda Cher by Corner Shop.
No, it's not.
Okay. It's no. Song for Bob by Nick Cave and Warren Ellis.
No.
Regulate.
Oh, dude, you should get this.
I should get this?
Yeah.
Give me a clue.
French.
Sebastian Tellier, La Ritournelle.
Yes. Okay. And it's Mr. Dan's Magic Wand mix, just to be clear. And that is the greatest song ever written. It's not a remix, it's a mix.
Okay, well, my list was better.
I do not think so.
I'm preparing to store him in next week with mine.
I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you know, I enjoyed having the musical bed, so you know what, gentlemen, let's broaden our minds. Let's have another piece of music, shall we?
Yay.
You might know this one. This is a great song. It's called The Wanderer. So yes, The Wanderer, okay. If you heard it before...
This fly has really freaked you guys out.
It really it's
thrown me right off my game. There's a full chocolate tray bake as well. That
do you want me to kill it for you guys?
Yes,
you want me to,
please
sort it out.
Daddy Craig. Yeah. That's a fucking grim nickname.
Jesus.
Daddy Craig.
Jesus, between that, your V-not lighting up, and
Jesus.
Everything else.
I was going to say it is episode...
It's gone right 69. Carry on, no encore.
I do apologize to our sound engineer.
It's 69, man. There you go. It's all too much. Yeah. So, I'd like to thank our sound engineer for quitting the show. Dion DiMucci of Dion and the Bell. It's crazy. Keep all this in. Dion DiMucci has taken legal action against game publisher ZeniMax Media, who are the parent company of the Fallout creators, Bethesda Softworks. If you played the Fallout games before, Fallout 3 was kind of a big hit a few years ago. Then there's Fallout New Vegas. Then now there's Fallout 4. They are first-person, kind of third-person role-playing games, and they have elements of violence in them. They're all right. They're pretty good. Good old time sink. But like they kind of trade on this weird old-school aesthetic. So all of which is to say that when the trailer for Fallout 4 arrived, it was scored by this song. And it was because you're playing a character called it the Lone Wanderer. So you're kind of out in this wasteland.
So it fits.
It fits perfectly. But the trailer has upset this Dion DiMucci fellow who believes that it is pissing all over his lovely song with images of graphic violence and homicidal murder.
Immoral images, in his own words.
Which is a hell of a thing to say. I've seen that trailer, and it's not quite the case. You do shoot a couple of mutants or bugs or something in that trailer, but it's not too bad. But he seems to be really, really upset, and thus is looking for the Dr. Evil sum of $1 million
A weird one.
In this lawsuit. And I don't know. I mean, like, the suit goes on to detail the narrative behind the song and how it was wrongly represented, and I quite like this. In The Wanderer, Dion gives life to the story of a sad young man who wanders from town to town, not having found himself or the capacity for an enduring relationship. It's pretty close to home. The song describes isolation during coming of age. Oh God, it really is. Without plaintiff's consent, defendants dubbed The Wanderer into commercials in which the protagonist, a wanderer, roams from one location to the next, armed and hunting for victims to slaughter. It's not quite the game.
No.
I don't think he's got a case here. He's got a case, but I don't think he's going
to
win.
I mean, the main thing is we got to play The Wanderer on the show, so...
That's the entire reason why I did the story. What a song.
Yeah, tune.
What a fucking song.
Actually, he's got another song called Only You Know, do you know it? It's really, really good.
Don't think so.
It might be in my top 10 favourite songs, but it's not,
it
actually.
Wasn't. Yeah.
Literally wasn't.
Just but he's really good. But he also is one of these people that found God a long time ago, so I can understand where he's coming from. And yeah, it's another case of... I mean, in an ideal world, the artist probably should have kind of say over that, but clearly doesn't have a legal.
Apparently he wasn't consulted, which I find weird.
And I don't find that strange at all. You hear that a lot, don't you?
But, like, surely you got to go to them and be like, we're a major corporation, we're putting out this huge game for profit.
Yeah, these major corporations are always going to people and checking their feelings.
But it's like licensing a song. Surely, like, that would have been part of the process. Like, I find it weird that one day he just found this out.
What I'm saying is he probably doesn't have the rights to the song.
They licensed the song all right. The fact is, though, that they then made an ad that he wasn't happy with.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's more that, like, he's like, I didn't know it was going to turn out like this.
He wasn't sitting in on the creative meeting that day.
Yeah, apparently not.
Fair enough.
Missed a memo.
Well, other creative meetings that have occurred and resulted in incredible products. Kendall and Kylie Jenner have been talking about their amazing t-shirt line.
Yeah.
Have you seen this line?
Literally amazing.
How would you describe this line?
Amazing.
Apart from that?
Sacrilegious.
Mind-boggling, yeah. Bizarre.
Tell us what they are.
It's basically pictures of Tupac and Biggie, which have now been superimposed with the Jenner sisters.
It's great. I think it's terrific.
Ozzy Osbourne as well, I think, was one of them.
I think it's a grand artistic statement, to be honest.
Really badly designed, retailing for ridiculous amounts of money, and they've been pulled. And they have noted that they only sold two of them. Which is not good returns. In the year, it continues to be a year of realizing stuff for Kylie Jenner. And
that was last year, wasn't it?
That was last year.
Look,
yeah.
I guess
this is a much grimmer year.
It's rolled over, yeah, for the Jenners. And they've responded, though, to people giving out about this and said that the allegations made are completely false and the lawsuit is baseless. There has been no infringement or violation of anyone's rights when it's clearly the case that it has been.
I'm like, liking this legal corner we've got going on this week.
They're just painfully terrible people, though, like...
Oh, hot take.
Wow.
Yeah. Hot take number two for the episode. Why would you say that, man? You don't know them.
I feel like I do at this point. I feel like everybody does, such as their ubiquitous presence.
Yeah, it's up there with the kind of worst, like, commercializing, you know, musical stuff I've seen. I just remember, I think it was Converse. Now, I'm not entirely sure, but they did a series of ads where it was, like, dead rock stars, like Kurt Cobain, with, like, angel wings and stuff, and wearing, like, Converse. It was like, that's a bit much.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing
wrong. Courtney Love clearly thought it was fine. Like, anyway.
Anyway, if it wasn't them, we're going to have to bleep that out. You do realize that, don't you? Lest we get sued.
Yeah.
And become an actual legal corner podcast. Okay, it's very hot in the studio. We haven't found that fly. We should probably get into songs of the week, should we?
Let's do it.
You know what? We got five songs. I need a pen.
Six of them, even.
Do we six?
Yeah.
Oh, we got six. Okay, well, in that case, I'm going to have to insist on our random number game. Craig Fitzpatrick.
Can I have number six, please?
Yeah, you can, man. Absolutely. This is Bloody Beetroots. They're back, and they got some special guests with them. Jet. Yeah, Jet. This song is called My Name is Thunder. Jet of Are You Gonna Be My Girl and fucking terrible fame. They were the subject of one of the best scathing reviews of all time on Pitchfork when the entire review was a video of a monkey pissing into his own mouth, I believe.
Yeah.
That was the entire review. Pretty good. So, yeah, they're back.
It's like the Bear Grylls of monkeys.
They're back with Bloody Beetroots. Now, Bloody Beetroots are like Italian, I believe.
Yes,
and I must confess... I saw them live at an Oxygen,
yeah.
And I had the time of my life.
I think I saw them at the same Oxygen, and I thought it was dreadful.
Yes, you were there that weekend.
Yes.
And yeah, but I remember getting into like this kind of weird mosh pit situation, and I emerged from it.
You had a great time.
Someone's t-shirt wrapped around my leg. Don't know where it came from or where it went, but you know.
Was it a Jet t-shirt?
No, it wasn't. But yeah, they've got some songs that I quite like, even if they might be a bit terrible.
Well, no, I just find them a bit in your face and abrasive.
Okay, Dad.
Yeah. Daddy Craig.
Daddy Craig. Jesus Christ. I was going to say the Oral Adventures of Daddy Craig. I meant Errol Adventures of Daddy Craig. It's getting worse. Okay, look. Sure. Let's talk about the song. What's going on here?
I've got about 30 seconds in, to be honest.
It's absolutely awful. Yeah. It's like an AC/DC impression, but over this like turbo dance bollocks like.
Yeah, I mean, that makes it sound better than it is, I think. What did you make of it, Dave, as a fan of both of these fine artists?
Don't you dare. Jet are fucking garbage. as is this song. It's rubbish. It's so bad.
It's awful.
I had to put it on the show, though, because I was like, I need people to feel my pain. Okay, it's so bad.
Show title right there.
It's so bad. Give me another number, please.
3.
Okay, from one to the other. Coldplay are back, fresh from Croke Park. This song is called Aliens. So, lads, I think that this is the song that David Bowie said, no thanks, Chris. What do you think?
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, they're back with Brian Eno. And some people have gotten very excited about this. I saw an article where I was like, this is a good Brian Eno song. And
I saw the same thing.
I'd quite like to hear the instrumental version, maybe, but it feels like Chris Martin is desperately trying to find a tune to pair it with and not quite succeeding. And as with most things Coldplay do, it comes from a very good place. it's aliens, all in caps, with spaces in between. And he compares migrants to UFOs. But I believe the proceeds are going to some migrant cause. So
oh, good.
It's
that's
more
fine
than I'm doing for them. And that's all I have to say about that.
You're not giving your old Q magazines, no?
I might. I just
Jesus.
Might.
Okay, well, look, hang on. This is particularly bad in terms of, like, the lyrics are just bad. Like, yeah. really bad. But, like, it starts off and it's got some kind of weird... It's got an interesting atmosphere.
It's got a...
And then...
It's vibey.
It's as if I genuinely thought I had two videos playing in the same... Like,
yeah.
Like, because there's this weird double up. And I'm like, oh, hang on, that's not palatable.
Yeah, the weird
my brain can't
percussion
handle this
electronic sort of thing that's going on.
It really
wrong.
Feels like someone pressed a button and forgot to turn it off.
Yeah.
Brian
Eno
was like, fuck it.
Yeah, the vocals just don't match up whatsoever. It sounds like a weird... jam/offcut of that Milo Xylodo album they put out.
It's that
kind of style. At least they're getting away from the EDM a bit. I mean, that's all you can say about it.
That's something, right?
Oh, yeah, that song with the Chainsmokers from earlier this year. That was great, wasn't it?
Yeah.
We all love that.
You can clearly see this, though, being a bit of a fucking, like, lighters in the air live moment, though. Especially because, like, let's face it, maudlin lyrical nothingness has never held them back before.
Phones
but usually
the
they
mate.
Have a decent chorus to back up their nothingness. Whereas with this, there's no real great chorus.
I could hear them loud and clear last Saturday.
I was going to say, by all accounts, it was a spectacular gig in terms of at least a production point of view.
Seems to have done really well, yeah.
And I kind of feel like, I do feel like Coldplay are overhated. I made the claim once on this show that I could name you 15 great Coldplay songs.
I think 15
that
would be stretching.
I immediately walked
you could
back
definitely get
to
an,
a 10.
Yeah, a 10.
Even then.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty a good return. Round.
Yeah, you can make a good Spotify playlist out of them.
Yeah,
and if that's not a modern reflection
Dave's
of
Dave's going to do that. Thanks, Dave. Check it out, everybody.
I'll do it.
Yeah.
You know I will.
I know you.
I love a playlist. Okay, number, please.
Number one, please.
Oh, yes. Let's do it. Nine Inch Nails, my boys, they're back. The song is called Less Than. Okay, so speaking of strange claims I've made in the past, when we did the listening guide for Nine Inch Nails on this very show, I noted that Nine Inch Nails probably don't have a bad song in their entire back catalogue. A big statement, and here's a bigger one, guys. The streak continues.
I mean, yeah, I'm not sure what to make of your kind of flawless record.
Infallible band.
But, yeah, this is good. I quite enjoyed it. It's kind of synth poppy, I guess, albeit with like far harder edge than most of that.
It's interesting because during the week I was listening to kind of some of their back catalogue, and I was listening to Pretty Hate Machine, which I very much enjoy the songs, but the synth, it does sound very dated production wise, doesn't it?
Hugely.
Yeah. So, like,
in a really fun way.
But it's like these 80s synths on the new one sound more 80s, but somehow less dated than the actual 80s synths on Pretty Hate Machine.
Sure. Well, I guess it's a bit like making something that's automatically retro, that, like, you know, it can't really date if you're already bedding it in sort of like 30 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, and okay, this reminds me quite a bit of The Hand That Feeds. It has that kind of pop industrial crunch. It's very short. It's got a brilliant full stop, which I love.
Hook.
Great hook.
It's very poppy. It's like, it could almost soundtrack like a lifestyle sports ad. Not in a bad way. But you know what I mean? Like, it's as close as they're ever going to get to it.
Lifestyle sports ad.
Well, like the Von Bondies doing Come On, Come On. Was that them?
Yeah, I mean, it's not quite as good as that.
Killers, I think.
Killers, yeah. That's what it was going for.
Yeah, okay, I think this is great. Now, granted, Preaching to the Converted for sure, but I think it is fantastic. I think it's really arresting. I think it's really upbeat. I love how just hooky it is. I quite like his lyrics on it, which aren't always his strong suit. This is part of a trilogy of EPs. The first one came out at the end of the year. It was called Not the Actual Events. It was five tracks on that. There's going to be five tracks on this. It's called Ad Violence, and it comes out next Friday. I'm very excited. And I'm also very excited to hear how these EPs will all stack up together once they're all out. I quite like the idea. He was talking to Zane Lowe when this was premiered on Beats 1. And he was basically saying how, like, you know...
Did Zane enjoy the new song?
Zane said it was an absolute belter, mate.
No way.
Shocking, isn't it? Wow. With his exclusive interview with Trent Reznor on the phone. On some weird landline connection, I don't know. So, essentially, Trent was saying that, he still loves the album as a concept, but feels that they're getting more out of this. And himself and Atticus Ross, who is now a full-fledged member of Nine Inch Nails, have kind of been talking about doing stuff like this for a while. And I like the fact that it does sound different to the previous EP. And yeah, this is a home run for me. I think it's addictive as all hell. It's a sugar rush from Nine Inch Nails.
Yeah, I'll give it a thumbs up.
Yes, number.
Hit me number two.
Hit me number two, okay. It's Dr. Dre, it's called Gunfire. Laid out with the chalk around them. Came back as kings, came back with rings. What if we them dogs right in the gunfire, gunfire. Na, na, na. Run that, yeah, run that, yeah. Na, na, na. We come fire, yeah, come fire. Now, I don't know what to make of this.
Right.
Yeah, you thought this was we searched for this on YouTube just for an easy way to listen, and you believed that it was a fraudulent recording.
You know how, like, you're like, okay, here's a track that's embargoed or is on one service only. Oh, look, some kind soul has put it up on YouTube, and you click in, and it's clearly,
it's like some
that person's demo.
Demo.
Yeah, you're just like, this doesn't sound like Dr. Dre.
I mean, it could be a kind of a computer-generated effort at a Dr. Dre song. It definitely does have some cliched features.
He certainly, like, switched up his style, both in terms of production and rapping-wise. Like, his register is much higher now.
Yeah.
He's obviously got new ghostwriters. I believe John Connor's doing a lot of stuff. People online seem to think Kendrick had a hand in this, and there's some Kendrick-ish elements to it, but I'm not sure. We don't really know as yet. This is for a kind of new documentary series, I believe. So it's kind of just, I don't know if it's like a grand announcement, here's my new single. It's just something that's going to slot in. I didn't really enjoy it, to be honest. I think the production was modern, not in a good way. I'm a big kind of defender and fan of Compton, which I thought he like knocked out of the park. But this is like, it's very literally one note. And it sounds like he's playing pure tinnitus. It just is...
Yes, that is fucking so irritating. Yeah. Not since Jennifer Lopez's Get Right, I think it was called, which has that... over and over again. Do you remember that?
The entire fucking song!
This has this kind of weird... like, I was like, no.
We fucking love air horns, though. Come on.
no, but this is not fun. This is not good.
I feel like it might have worked if you had actually Kendrick just going nuts over it, but Drake's never been the best rapper and he's almost trying too hard now.
Speaking of air horns, I watched the first Conor McGregor Floyd Mayweather press conference thing. The one in LA was an embarrassment for all concerned. And let me tell you, listener, if you're going to pay for that circus, well then, Jesus Christ. Okay, so Floyd, when he like stepped up when he was being introduced by his hype man, there wasn't any kind of like class music kicking in. There was just a like three air horns, like what we would do on the show. He must be listening.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, tremendous.
Yeah, must be said with his tax issues, he's probably had to scale back in the musical. Yeah,
they did play "I Get Money" by 50 Cent beforehand, like a good bit.
And they had Aloe Black sing. Oh, that Aloe Black, remember him?
It's like 2010, I interviewed him. Is it?
What?
I interviewed Aloe Black.
What did he have to say for himself?
Very little.
Did he apologize?
No. Do you know what happened? He wouldn't let me film him. I should point out.
What were you trying to film, Dave? Show us on the doll where Dave and Raddy
touched. Was this an Arthur's Day extravaganza?
Yes, it was. Yeah, yeah. In which we had to go and haul an iPad over to a hotel to interview various different people.
Is that when you fell in love?
Oh, man.
With Aloe Black.
With Aloe Black?
No, with a singer who will not be named.
All right.
Who hasn't gone on to do much, sadly. Yeah. Nonetheless, I interviewed a few people that day, including Scissor Sisters, who were lovely.
Mm-hmm. They're great,
yeah. And, like Aloe Black. Miles Kane, I interviewed him.
Nice chap.
Also wouldn't let us film.
Best mate.
See, essentially what happened was clearance wasn't gotten in advance.
Right.
So some people were like, what? You want to film us?
I can understand that.
And Aloe Black was having fucking none of it. I interviewed him with a dictaphone and then never wrote up the interview.
Nice.
Now he's just begging for people to be filming him. Like, what was he even doing there?
He needs a dollar.
I'm guessing he just happened to be in the same...
He needs a dollar, Craig. I have a great joke.
I'm guessing he was just in the same like VIP section as Floyd like the night before in the club. And Floyd was like, do you want to come along to this?
Yeah, I can't really explain it.
Sounds like profiling to me. Let's have a track, shall we? I'm joking.
Jesus. Maybe,
okay. They're both famous. Yes. VIP section.
Yes, you have your hatred for celebrities and what they get up to in these exclusive zones that they call nightclubs.
Craig, give us a number.
Give us number 5.
Okay, Cut Copy have returned. I'm not sure why. They sound exactly the same. This song is called Airborne. Copy, yeah. They've got a few good songs 7 or 8 years ago. This is a bit nothing.
I quite liked it, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of that kind of Nile Rodgers guitar still, yeah, but also done in a weird way that almost reminded me of like Ariel Pink to a certain extent. Like, there's something slightly off kilter and enjoyable going off, and like with the flat voice, and it didn't really do much for me. And it kind of switches up at weird points, which I don't think quite worked. It seemed like they ran out of ideas quite quickly and just thought, oh, we'll stick in a bit of this and that. They're very much in that group of acts whose name alone just made me never check them out.
They have the odd good belter. Hearts on Fire is a great song.
Actually, that is.
And they've one of the ones that I forget the name of right now from the same album. Right. I must check it out.
I enjoyed this. I agree it might be slightly busy. It's slightly too long. But the kind of the juxtaposition of the kind of like funk instrumentation with kind of like dream poppy vibes or whatever, and a proper vocal hook.
Listen, genres. I thought it was good.
It's perfectly fine, but yeah, you know,
it's perfectly cromulent. It'll do.
Yeah.
Finally, this week we check back in with Craig's favorite genre, grime. Hey. It's Dizzy Rascal. And what are you gonna do? It was all your fault. You were too busy keeping it real. What you gonna do when the walls close in? What you gonna do when it all goes grim? What you gonna do when it's all on top and they still wanna know if you're on this team? Everybody wanna take shots at the king. What you gonna do, sink or swim? What you gonna do? There's a whole lot of love and a whole lot of hate and the line is thin. What you gonna do when it ain't all sweet? What you gonna do now your kids gotta eat? What you gonna do? Cause you've gone too far, you're a star and you can't go back to the street. Can't disappear, kick back for a week, it's actually peak. What you gonna do? Keep quiet or speak? Ain't nobody gonna shed no tears, get back on your feet.
What you gonna do? What you gonna do? What you gonna do? What you gonna do? What you gonna do when it's all on you? What you gonna do? 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 What you gonna do when it ain't all about you? What you gonna do? 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 What you gonna do when it's all on you? Boy, what you gonna do?
What are you gonna do, Craig, when I make you listen to Dizzy Rascal?
I mean, it's a big return. It's the big one. It's kind of it must be weird for Dizzy Rascal seeing like grime explode in kind of what five plus years he's been away. Definitely four since his last record, and I believe his like it was weird. He kind of arrived at a time when grime wasn't happening so much, and he got all the critical plaudits for what he was doing. And I was actually a big fan of the debut album, and it seemed for him to almost, you know, stay commercially viable, he had to move away from grime and do a lot of quite cheesy collaborations. I believe the last record featured stuff with Robbie Williams, Will.i.am. Didn't really do great in the charts, even though that was like so cynically engineered to do so, and moving away from his roots. And this song is clearly about like quite a brave, honest thing of just like, I assume he's talking about himself.
Oh,
isn't
he? Yeah. Well, I think he's talking about himself, and he's also sounding a warning to all those guys that he's seen suddenly explode, that like, you know, he's kind of been there and done that.
I like, you don't get that a lot from grime or hip hop, just kind of really like an admission of, okay, here's where my career's at and it's not exactly going to plan. So I kind of like that. Some lines were good. Song wise, no. Not doing it for me whatsoever. Those synth horns were very irritating and kind of just sounded farty to me. Sounded outdated and I didn't enjoy it.
I quite like it. I thought that kind of sinister beat combined with his aggression.
I like the circular thing that was going on at the start. It reminded me of like Really Dope from Danny Brown's last album, like that almost RZA-esque kind of menace to it, but those bloody synth horns.
Not as bad as the undercurrent in the Dr. Dre song, though. I didn't think it was anywhere near as aggressive. I thought this was good. I mean, I don't think it's necessarily flexing the muscles that he needs to kind of recapture the public imagination. Maybe it will. But I saw him live, I think, which had been Fruit last year.
Yeah.
And it was fun.
Like, yeah, it was grand.
It was good. But like, he was kind of leaning on the hits, as you would at a festival.
Sure.
I've seen him at two festivals now. I saw him at that festival I went to in Austria, where I invented a wise
old
man.
Oh, and you invented the man and almost killed a snowboarder, yeah.
Yeah, well, the second part is true. The first part isn't. The horrible part where I nearly killed someone is actually true. Nonetheless, that's that for the songs this week.
That was vintage songs of the week.
Thanks, man. Yeah, nailed it. It's a very hot studio. And I still haven't found that fly.
Keep your trousers on. Thanks.
I'm wearing shorts again, to be fair.
And again.
That's true. I didn't want to draw attention to them.
It's very warm. So, I said last week we weren't going to do the Fan Club album, but we are. Why?
Because it's July. Sports Pixies. And it felt topical.
And there's a dearth of new releases. I was mistaken. I thought it was out this week, as in today, that the show drops. It's not out until the 4th of August, but we want to talk about it now. So we're going to have a listen. Can't understand why everybody's lying to themselves, you see. Can't understand why everybody's so, so right, that's Bullethead, the opening track off this self-titled debut album, which kind of tells you a lot of what you need to know about this band in quite a short space of time.
Yeah.
As two-minute tracks go, it's pretty good.
It was the lead single from their first EP as well, I think, probably going back 18 months at this stage. And yeah, it's something of a mission statement. It kind of flies out of the traps. And yeah, like you say, probably sums up what they do quite well. This is an album that doesn't generally hang around. There's not an awful lot of fat on it, it feels. And yeah, the kind of aggression and pace is obviously continued throughout.
Yeah, I mean, if it's something of a calling card, it didn't quite work for me in terms of, to be honest, after this track was over, it's like, I can see what they're doing. It's kind of a bit redundant in 2017. And they're not quite hitting those kind of melodic notes that they're trying to hit. Then Role Models followed, and I was like, I can see, like, lyrically, this is kind of boring and angsty, and it seems to be very formulaic. Lightning, like, offered, I'm just going through tracks now, but Lightning offered a bit more in terms of the guitar was actually doing interesting twists and sort of, but it was actually around the midway point to cut to the chase.
No, keep going. Track four.
It's one of those strange albums that actually, It's not front loaded. It's not back loaded. It's kind of like around 5 to 9.
Right.
They have all their best songs, but they.
Christ,
what
I'm slightly mental.
What I'm saying
the
is
the cover
that
is quality. The colors are very nice. The CD is a durable plastic.
There are three of them in the band.
What I'm saying
they're
is
from Dublin.
What I'm saying is what they are doing is something that is not reinventing the wheel whatsoever. Yeah. But they do it much better than what we've just heard elsewhere in this album.
Brilliant review, Craig.
And there's at least three songs that made me think, oh, they might actually have a good album in them. But this isn't it.
Yeah, I mean, I do tend to agree when you talk about the middle of the album perhaps being the strongest area. Yeah. I think Bad Words is probably a standout track.
It is, but it's a minute too long.
I don't agree with you on that one. You mentioned
how dare you.
You mentioned it live, and I don't think so. I do think the Dreamcatcher...
Yeah, nudged him, and I went, this one's a minute too long.
You actually did, like, yeah, it was the weirdest live gig moment in a while. Yeah. Dreamcatcher, like, it's good, but I felt it could have been better.
You're just naming songs.
Somebody slightly more experienced, perhaps.
You're naming, Dreamcatcher, Bad Words. I thought Loners, they're, like, standout track. Yeah. It's a very good song.
I mean, they aren't reinventing the wheel, you're dead right. And the question is going to be asked of, like, is this redundant in 2017? The thing is, I mean, like, you know, on one hand, people are kind of talking about that, like, you know, the death of guitar bands and blah, blah, which we've discussed before.
Yeah, and we should discuss again in light of this record, because this is on a major label. And therefore, people think this is obviously marketable and it's a resurgence, perhaps. I have likened them to the band Otherkin before. And
which
I
think is not.
I don't think it's unfair. Mm. I think the Fan Club are the better band. But it's that kind of thing of, like, here's some lads with guitars and they're just racing out the traps. And it's like, these are, like, short, kind of punchy numbers and they're designed for live play and that kind of stuff. And there's nothing inherently wrong with that. But I just think that there's not really much substance with this.
It reminded me of Irish bands that were kind of getting a lot of press around the time I started listening to music, around the kind of turn of the century, like the likes of Angels of Mons and stuff, that actually put in, like, a good shift, could write a decent melodic song that was based in grunge, and certainly with Fan Club, I mean, just Weezer's Blue Album's all over this,
even sure.
Early Foos,
yeah.
But a lot of bands that kind of have, you know, even after the initial wave of these American bands, like, this has been done in Dublin before. Now, I think they do it quite well on a number of tracks, but they just need that standout thing to separate them from the herd.
They do it very well, but there's limitations with this sound, and over the course of a record, it becomes exposed the more it goes on.
Yeah.
There is a bit of that for sure, yeah. I mean, I'm reminded of what we were talking about when we say kind of like bubblegum pop. It's easy to write a 3-minute hit song. It's very difficult to write a 36-minute hit album when you're kind of trying to use the same formula. The one thing that I'd say, though, is, and like, I get the fact that, you know, like, they do need that little something extra, something to mark themselves out, something new, something exciting. At the same time, though, it feels really rich to, on one hand, sort of be bemoaning the sort of, you know, lack of guitar bands, and then on the other hand saying, well, they're just derivative and we've heard it all before, you know?
But that said, I mean, like, you know, pleasingly, this doesn't go in for an annoying soppy ballad for track 11 or track 10 or whatever, like, which, you know, albums like this often do.
Yeah.
It's often like, let's showcase our softer side now. But then again, if you don't do that, you're kind of, you know, like, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't.
But it's not just basic rock song or ballad. I mean, there's light and shade. Like, there was an interesting quote.
They're three-piece with guitars, man.
I know.
Like, what can they really branch out to unless they bring in a fucking synth?
Yeah.
Which would sound bizarre.
There was an interesting quote from the drummer, Derek Holman, who said, like, the songs are like, punch your friend in the face whilst drunk fun, which is a strange idea of fun. But then he added that there's actually lots of layers going on. And I would say, actually, no, the fun kind of element is
actually
there.
Actually, Dara.
And I think
I think
the melodies are kind of there at the forefront, but there's not really many layers. And actually, I think the rhythm section doesn't offer enough diversity. It's very kind of A to B, join the dots, isn't it? Like, there's not a lot of kind of interesting kind of bass lines. The drums, very kind of routine. It's all about the fucking front man for me.
They're also guilty of not having a lot of imagination when it comes to breakdowns.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the middle eights are just like, and now we're back in. Like
the solos are just the kind of melody, the main melody repeated. Like there's a lot of kind of formulaic stuff, which I think maybe it's just a case of new band get out of their system. They could go on to better things.
I was about to say, like, you know what? Yeah, the one thing is that like I do try to hold back from giving out about a lack of experimentation on a band's debut album.
But
I
then
mean,
again,
you know, this is very much finding their feet, sort of.
Sure,
territory.
But then again, sometimes a debut album isn't that. Sometimes a debut album is an incredible shot in the arm.
Oh well, of course, yeah.
New Life's debut album, for example, like you know, had a lot of invention going on there. They're ostensibly a guitar band. Sure. Now, I'm not saying I expect that from this band, but there is something missing here. And I wonder, like, is this just, hey, this is an ad to come see us live, and where it's really kind of felt? Like, what did you think of them as Pixies?
Yeah, I thought they were pretty good.
Yeah, they fit in.
They did fit in perfectly, yeah.
Is that the problem, though? Do they just fit in?
Yeah, and I mean, there's also a problem with, as we said earlier, you know, like, if they're fitting in with the Pixies, a band who arguably were in their heyday sort of 25 years ago, does that say something about the music that you're producing that it slots in so easily with sort of like mid-90s?
And like they're slotting in with maybe the Pixies, say, less inspired or kind of more routine moments as opposed to the kind of weird magical stuff that they have. I mean, there's something just in terms of inventiveness that is... or inspiration that's kind of lacking. While they can write a tune, they can write a tune.
They definitely can.
That's the other reason, yeah, that I wouldn't fret too much of what's to come. Because
nice.
They're
nice.
On a music podcast,
capable.
No less.
They're clearly capable of writing good tunes, yeah. Of like identifying good melodies. If they can do that, it's really just kind of like tweaks and changes, really, in the background that could like elevate it.
Yeah, 100%. Maybe they could work with Bloody Beetroots on the next record or something.
Let's not
really bring it out. No, this is, as debuts go, hey, look, it's grand. You know, I've seen them live. They're good live. Check them out. Score-wise, I don't know, 5, 6?
Yeah, I'd give it a 6.5. I think it's
decent.
I'd probably got to go 5.5.
Yeah, I think 5.5 is fair. Like, there's nothing here to be, like, run a fucking mile from. But
no,
I just
no, it's
feel
all well
like
executed. Like, it's, yeah.
I want... you know, like this whole death of the guitar band nonsense. Like, you know, like that's never going to go away.
Yeah.
But I kind of want stronger defenses for that. And this album just only goes so far.
Yeah.
But they're definitely, you can pick and choose from this easy. You can throw a couple of tracks into a playlist. You all good. Worth checking out. Give it a go when it's out in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
What else could we listen to?
I just got delivered the new Avatar album.
Delivered.
You know what I mean. Like, they emailed it to me. It's called Eucalyptus. It was unveiled, as we discussed before, when he sent a fucking jigsaw to somebody. And frankly, the album is just as weird as sending a jigsaw of the album to somebody.
Have you seen the Nintendo put out a jigsaw, a Super Mario jigsaw there? It's a 1,000-piece jigsaw, right?
Right.
It's a big Super Mario with like a massive red background.
Oh.
3/4 of the jigsaw is just red. Like, how the fuck he's gonna do
amazing.
It?
Amazing.
But yeah, so it's kind of like a mix between acoustic balladry and like obviously just kind of techno, electronic, glitchy fuck up shit. Like, very strange. But I am quite enjoying it. I think.
Good. I've been mainly listening to Lamb Chop, who I don't know if you guys are into this Nashville band. Another case of maybe like the band name putting you off ever checking out. But our good friend Carlo, or Dr. Magicoco. Shout out to him.
Dr. Magicoco.
He put together a playlist. He's a big fan of Kurt Wagner, which is a great musician's name and also an X-Men's name. He's a very good writer.
I believe Carlo said that Lamb Chop fellow was a lovely man when he met him at some gig or something.
He sounds like he's a lovely man and he can write a good line. And there's a playlist on Spotify if anyone else wants to check it out. Somewhere Lost Teenagers. I've been very much enjoying that from Carlo. So yeah.
In anticipation of Marilyn Manson's new record, which has been retitled from Say 10 to Heaven Upside Down, I've gone back to The Pale Emperor, an album that still works for me quite strongly 2 years on. Can't wait for that new record. Big Marilyn Manson fan. Think he still has it. His father just passed away, which was quite sad. They were very, very close. He's just about to go out and tour and do this, so I'm curious to see what will happen or if he'll even make any changes. But yeah, that album was supposed to be out in February. It's been pushed back a whole bunch. I hope it's good. But his most recent offering is fucking great.
Yeah,
if you haven't checked
fantastic.
It out, I will say it again. The Pale Emperor is a great goddamn record.
Also, actually, very briefly, the new single from Wolf Alice, which we didn't have time to talk about today.
Don't delete the kisses.
And yeah, for some reason, I listen to it a lot.
I really like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like it. And I mean, like...
It shares a lot with, like, Bros from the first album, I guess.
And, well, I thought it was a good example, though, and, like, that and Yuk Fu, which was the previous, which we used as exit music before on the show. This is an example to me of a band that is actually not afraid to step out of their comfort zone. I'm really curious about that record now.
Yeah,
and, yeah, as I was saying earlier on, I think that Don't Delete the Kisses track would be good in an indie movie.
that you're going to write.
That I'm
going to
make, yeah.
And I'm going to direct.
I'm going to find a way to put it in. Colm can act in the indie movie.
Sure, why not?
One man's quest to take it easy. Okay, so... it's stolen, it's a tagline from a film. But what film? I'll tell you next week. For now, our exit music this week is... Are you thinking about what film it's from?
I have an idea, go on.
Do you want to take a guess?
No.
Craig?
Goodfellas.
No. It wasn't from that. I'm sure you can just Google it, listener. It's Ferris Bueller's Day Off, okay?
There it is.
So, yes, we've had Bitch Falcon on the show before. I'm a huge fan. Great band. They are playing Longitude this weekend. Are any of us going?
No.
Yeah, none of us. You're going. Our sound engineer is going.
Hey.
All
right.
For all 3 days. Sunday.
She's also not going to mic, you see, so you've got to repeat what you're saying.
She's going on Sunday. And
Sunday,
also, by the
bloody
way,
Sunday.
Also, by the way, do you know what's happening on that Sunday? This is like a new thing that's kind of coming in, because Bon Iver did it at Forbidden Fruit this year.
Oh, fucking Mumford and Sons are curating shit.
And Mumford and Sons are curating, and therefore all other stages shut down before their set commences.
That's excellent.
So you got to see them. Are you a fan of Mumford and Sons, Eve?
Well, there you go. Perfect.
Is. That's not... Okay, well... I want a full report. We'll get you a mic for the next episode.
Yeah, mic'd up for next week.
I'm not going. Is there any coverage on TV? Picnic style?
I don't think so.
Okay, right, fair enough. Because we reviewed it last year, even though I wasn't there. It was very impressive. Check that out. Go back in time into the No Encore vaults. Yeah. But for now, Bitch Falcon, they play on the Friday. So if you are going, I highly recommend you check out Bitch Falcon. They're great live. They have done a remix. Actually, Lizzie Fitzpatrick, the singer, has done a remix of their track Wolf's Tooth, titled Wolf's Tooth Reloaded. Presumably, Wolf's Tooth Revolutions will follow. There's a Matrix gag for everyone to enjoy there.
We got it.
This is a great song. This is a great remix. Actually, I like when remixes do something a bit different, and this one does. So like I say, go see me if you get the chance. And my name is Dave Hanrady. There will be no encore. This has been No Encore. I fucked that one up, but it doesn't matter. Next week, we will be doing a listening guide.
We will.
On Four Lads from Dublin.
Yeah. Four young whippersnappers who set the world alight.
The hype.
Yeah, ahead.
Feedback.
Of the Joshua Tree tour in Croke Park. We'll be talking about you too.
Next week. Enjoy. Bitch Falcon. Bye. We'll be right back.
This podcast is part of the Headstuff Podcast Network.